Robert Cutler is here. Robert is a senior research fellow at the Eurasian, Russian, and Eurasian Studies program at Carleton University. Robert, a very good evening to you. Is it real, this relationship between the customer, China, and the patron, Russia? Good evening.
Hello, John. Good to be with you. Yes, it is real. It's been growing for a number of years. 2001, they signed a treaty that was the first major treaty they signed in 50 years, and they've just been getting closer ever since.
Closer how? Because one has a lot of cash to spend, that would be China, and Russia does like the price of oil, and the price of natural gas, though low, does give it another customer besides the fickle and troubled Europeans. So is this closeness based on economic advantage for Russia, or is this closeness based on a warming of relations between these two cold, one a former communist and one a present communist superpower?
Well, they both don't like how the end of the Cold War turned out. China is a little less revisionist than Russia is, but they both have adopted over the past number of years a certain antipathy towards the United States and the values of what we used to call Atlantic civilization. And as you say, the Chinese are energy hungry. They want to, if possible, import energy over land so that they never have to worry about naval choke points like the Straits of Malacca. And they're also in the same neighborhood. They have a long border. They have a lot of common concerns. So there's a very material basis for their cooperation, as well as any basis in idealistic thinking.
Oh, let's get fundamental here, because this turns into pipeline politics. What is the Skovorodino-Daqing-Daqing oil pipeline?
Yeah, Skovorodino-Daqing is a pipeline that runs from Russia into China. It has about 45 miles in Russia and a couple hundred miles in China, and it basically they signed an agreement some time ago to where China did something that they haven't done before until just recently in the last meeting that they had. China actually lent the money, made an upfront interest-free payment in advance for 25 or 30 years of oil, 600,000 barrels a day. I'm sorry, 300,000 barrels a day that was used to build the pipeline and to get the oil ready to be produced and sent over. Now, what they've done just recently in the last meeting that they had in Moscow was they agreed to double those imports from 300,000 to 600,000 barrels a day, which means that China would be importing almost as much oil as Germany does. And they also agreed on a big, which they hadn't done before. They agreed to agree on terms for a big gas project where gas from Russia would go to China as well.
Right. It's natural gas that China wants. And is that something that Russia wants to encourage, given the low prices of natural gas?
Well, yes, they want to develop as much as possible. And although they won't be getting the prices that they're looking for, they are looking certainly towards Asia and China, as much of the world is, as the growth market in energy for a couple of decades to come, at least. And so they're very happy to be able to develop finally this Siberian gas if they can finally reach terms on China with price, which is what's been keeping them from agreeing for the last dozen years or so. But they finally agreed to agree, and it looks like they might actually agree this time, because China has decided to consider, and probably will do, making another interest-free loan to Russia, a big advance payment for the gas that they're going to get over the next 30 years. That will enable Russia to take that capital and then build the pipeline that they need to build for China to get it. That's something that China had refused to do until now.
The exotic part here is the Siberian Arctic energy projects that the Chinese are now said to be going to participate or are participating in. What does that look like? Are they going to explore in that forbidden land in the north? It's mostly frozen.
Yes, that's another part of the agreement that that was signed, understanding that was reached during the most recent summit meeting in Moscow just a couple weeks ago, that as you might remember back in the last decade, Vladimir Putin, when he was president before, made a rather remarkable statement openly to the press saying, global warming is not against Russian national interests because it means the Arctic will melt and we can get to the energy there that's underneath all of that ice and snow, and we can sell that. And so they've been developing Siberian and Arctic energy projects for some time. The most recent agreement allows China to participate in a couple of the offshore fields that they're seeking to develop, and also in have an option for a number of onshore fields.
Quickly here, Robert, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, you write it's a shell. I've been told that it's a failure. Is this a new start for the idea of Moscow working with Beijing?
Well, they've been working together for a while. They just don't need the Shanghai the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They just don't need it for that because there's nothing that the SCO offers them that they can't do bilaterally. And that's basically true for all of the members of the SCO, which is why it hasn't, taken off. SCO is just an excuse for a bunch of countries to get together and hold meetings in the corridor of an allegedly multilateral organization.
The question about Russia and China working together. Last question here. There's all that land called Siberia. Very few people in it. China looks at it. Does it look at it aggressively? Is Russia worried about that?
There's division of opinion in Russia about that. There was a big scare in the last decade about the Chinese moving into Siberia. If they do, it's not going to be without anyone really knowing. You take Kazakhstan, for example. The Chinese have over time negotiated the long-term lease, 99-year lease of agricultural lands in Kazakhstan, which they may be able to populate and even stay. And there's a lot of Kazakhstan public opinion, that's very ambivalent about that. As for Siberia, well, yeah, you have all of the old treaties, so-called unequal treaties, parts of that part of the world used to be part of China. I think it's probably fair to say that the economic access to the economic resources and to the energy is more important to the Chinese right now than any territorial occupation.
Robert Cutler, Carleton University Senior Research Fellow, Eurasian, European, Russian, and Eurasian Studies. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.